Well, good evening, brethren, and welcome to another Wednesday. Just confirm that you can hear me clearly. I was just saying that I'm not sure about the internet performance. It is a fraction of what I was having earlier today at the office space that I was at. I'm at the hotel now, and the internet is very poor. So I'm going to not use video or very much of anything other than the Bible this evening, and hopefully my voice is coming across clearly, and we'll be okay for tonight. So let's open with a word of prayer. And then we will get straight into the study. Our Heavenly Father, we pause before beginning our study, as we usually do, Lord, because we want to acknowledge you. We want to acknowledge the privilege that we have of studying your word, this ancient word. It's been around for thousands of years, and every generation benefits from it, Father. And certainly we need it as we are winding down in this age of man, this period just before the return of Christ. We know, Father, it's accelerating, it's spinning into chaos, and we just thank you for the comfort and the confidence that we get from your word. We pray, Father, that you'll bless our understanding as we go line by line through your word. We praise you, we thank you, we ask this blessing in Jesus' holy name. Amen. So I should have mentioned as well that Pastor Murray will not be able to join us this evening, so he will, God willing, be with us again next week. And I won't have a lot of time for the chat afterwards, but I'll have some time. And then, you know, God willing, if we have significant questions or questions that will take some time to answer, God willing, we'll cover those next week. So let me switch over to the text. And it looks like the internet is performing well enough for us to complete the study. But I just want to, first of all, as we look at these lamentations, to look at Psalm 1, to go back to the beginning of this, the whole set of Psalms, but certainly Book 1, we're going to see this differentiation between the man that follows God and the wicked man, the man that does not follow God. And so the man that does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the seat of the scornful, that man is blessed. And David clearly makes a differentiation between the righteous and the wicked. With that in mind, let's go to Psalm 26. And you'll remember in Psalm 25, we ended with, and I'm just looking outside and there's some serious rain that's falling. So hopefully the internet will be fine. In Psalm 25, we ended with David's cry for God to redeem Israel. And that's going to be important as we go through this next set of Psalms. So Psalm 26, a Psalm of David, verse 1. Judge me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity. So you can see the confidence here that this man is Torah compliant. And I'm just getting a message that it's cutting in and out. And I've got low internet and very poor weather as well. Let me just carry on a little bit, and if it's not working, we'll just have to resume next week. So I'll just carry on a little bit. Hopefully I'm understandable. If not, please let me know. So he says here, judge me, O Lord. You can see the confidence he has in terms of his Torah compliance. This is a man that is sincere and authentic and highly motivated in his walk with God. And so as he falls into trouble now, And what we'll see in these Psalms is the depth of trouble and at the same time the absolute confidence in Yahweh's ability to intervene and to save. So we see two extremes here, extreme trouble and extreme confidence in God. He says, judge me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity. I have trusted also in the Lord, therefore I shall not slide. And this is the type of confidence that we have to have as we go forward into our future, which I think is very clear to everybody. We're moving into a time of chaos. We're moving into a time, the time of lawlessness that Jesus Christ prophesied. But here, if we have that confidence that we are walking in our integrity, we are being Torah compliant, we can trust in God and we shall not slide, no matter how it appears. We walk by faith and not by sight. And then he says, examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my reins and my heart. Nothing is hidden here. This verse 2 is quite amazing in terms of the personal relationship that David has with God. That there's nothing, there's no hypocrisy here. There's no double-mindedness. There's just a very clear relationship that he has with his God, that he can say, God, examine me and prove me, try my reins and my heart. So I'm getting a message that there's no issues here. A couple of messages saying that it's breaking up, but most people are saying it's fine. I think it should be fine for the recording. So I think I'll go ahead and it should be fine for the archive. He says, let me just go back to verse 2. He says, so examine me, O Lord, and prove me, try my reins and my heart, for your loving kindness is before my eyes. This confidence that David has, it's not so much in his integrity as it is in God's integrity. That he's placing his confidence on God's chesed, this loving kindness, this word that's translated loving kindness, which is the Hebrew word chesed, which the best way to think about this is covenant love and covenant faithfulness. Structure where we're going to see an A B B A pattern, so, and then something in the middle, and so now he focuses on these enemies of the law and these enemies of God and those who do not walk in the way of the Torah and those who sit in the seat of the scornful. He says, I have not sat with vain persons, neither will I go in with dissemblers. Dissemblers are basically hypocrites or deceivers. We are surrounded now by the Islamic invasion into the Western nations, and they practice dissembling. That is, it's called al-taqiyah, which is religious deception. That as long as what they're doing advances the cause of Islam, it's fine for them to deceive, it's fine for them to lie. In fact, it's a part of their religion. And then we have the Marxists, who are also gaining significant traction. In the last three to five years, it's amazing the traction that they've gained, but they've been steadily growing for the last 90 years. They've been really working towards this, and certainly since the 60s, they've been gaining significant traction, but in the last 5 years, it's been unbelievable. And who knows what the next few years will bring in these Western nations. And both of these ideologies are seeking totalitarian control. Both of them are promising utopia in order to get totalitarian control. And so there's a lot of dissembly and deception that's involved in this. And David is clear, he's not going that way. I have hated the congregation of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. And this is very important for us, that we don't go with the group. We're not involved in groupthink. And groups always have a mind of their own, where the individual can no longer think straight when they throw their lot in with a group. And what the Marxists play at is identity politics, that they're going to reach out to everyone and try to get you to see yourself as part of a group. And then once you identify with that group, you lose the ability to think for yourself. Once you identify with that group, in fact, you as an individual no longer matter. And David is very clear here. He doesn't care how many people are going in this evil way. He doesn't care how many people are colluding together in a certain path. If it's not the path of the Torah, if it's not the path of Yahweh, he's not interested. And this is how we have to be. We have to be able to stand as individuals in God's way. And it doesn't matter if everyone around us is giving up, if everyone around us is betraying, we will not betray. We will stand firm, and we will not have our ability to think for ourselves. We will not have it hijacked by any group. And David is very clear here that he's not getting caught up in groupthink. And he hates the congregation of evildoers, and he will not sit with the wicked. Sometimes we look, and if everybody's doing it, it must be right, and we're happy to go along. Not David, and neither should we. And now he says, now, so that's the wicked. Now he focuses on the righteous. I will wash my hands in innocency. So I will surround your altar, O Lord. This is how I will have a relationship with you. That I will do what's right, regardless of what everybody else is doing. That I may publish with the voice of thanksgiving and tell of all your wondrous works. David is absolutely confident. Sinners, nor my life with bloody men. And this again, you know, these people who promise utopia, it's amazing the price that it has to be paid. That the simple buy into these promises of utopia, you know, free healthcare, free education, eliminate all your debt, we'll do everything for you, the government will look after you. And then once we buy into this, the size of the government that's required to pull all of this off leads to totalitarianism. And once they get that kind of upper hand, that leads to slaughter. And Marxism has never been implemented anywhere. Socialism, communism, this ideology of Marxism has never been implemented anywhere without slaughter. To the tunes of tens of millions of people. So then in the 20th century, 100 million souls were slaughtered in the pursuit of this utopian promise. Islam is the same thing, 270 million souls slaughtered in the pursuit of this Islamic paradise. And so these are bloody men who make these utopian promises, and when you buy into them and they get the crowd going with them, it ends in bloodshed and slaughter. And David is saying, I want nothing to do with this. I want nothing to do with this. Gather not my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloody men, in whose hands is mischief. And their right hand is full of bribes. And you know, we have seen this recent news with Jeffrey Epstein, the arrest of Jeffrey Epstein, and this is going to disclose a tremendous amount of mischief and a tremendous amount of bribery. And we're going to see people who we have looked up to and thought that they were honorable people who have been caught up in this pedophilia and have been put in compromising positions and have been forced to do things and make decisions that they might not otherwise want to make, but now they're stuck because they got involved in this pedophilia. And we need to be clear that we can't be involved in any of this mischief, and we cannot be bribed. We cannot be swayed. We are going to stick to the path of God. He says, but as for me, regardless of what they do, as for me, I will walk in my integrity. Redeem me and be merciful unto me. My foot stands in an even place. In the congregations will I bless the Lord. And so, again, David has this vision that he will be faithful to God. God is faithful to Israel. He will be faithful to the God of Israel. And he knows that there's going to be a place for him in the congregation of the righteous. So that's Psalm 26. And again, we get the sense of the theme here is God's salvation. That despite the magnitude of the trouble, the magnitude of God's power is far greater. And we're going to see this repeated now again in Psalm 27, a Psalm of David. The Lord is my light and my salvation. So this psalm begins right away with the confidence in the Lord. Some psalms begin with the complaint and the plea, and he puts his case in front of God, and then comes the salvation. In this case, he starts off this psalm right at the outset with confidence in the Lord's salvation. The Lord is my light and my salvation. And because of this confidence that he has in the Lord as his light and his salvation, he then asks, it's a rhetorical question, whom shall I fear? It's almost like he feels the fear and the anxiety welling up inside him, and he has to remind himself, wait a minute, the Lord is my light. Yahweh is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Why should I fear men? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? And again, we're studying this because it's going to be relevant to us. The world is changing. People are coming into power that are, their heart is full of mischief. Their heart is full of murder. Their heart hates Jesus Christ and needs to stamp Christ out and all of his followers. Christ, in fact, said, they've hated me. They're going to hate you because they hate me. So we have to be able to reason with ourselves the way David did. Look, wait a minute. The Lord, God, Yahweh, is my light and my salvation. Whom should I be afraid of? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked, even my enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. And this is the line of sight that we have to have, no matter what it looks like in the near term. And again, last week we talked about the arrest of Tommy Robinson and what most certainly would be a death sentence for him if they put him in these jihadi-controlled prisons and they just leave him to the prisoners who are running the prisons. Certain death. But even if we find ourselves in that situation, we have to have a line of sight to the finish line that we God will be glorified in Israel. So he says, when the wicked, even my enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Though a host should encamp against me or surround me, my heart shall not fear. And this is the type of confidence that we need to glean from David and from his example and from these words, these psalms, that even if a whole army surrounds me, I'm not going to be afraid. Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident. One thing, notice his single-mindedness here. One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after. What is that one thing? That I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in his temple. So David is just, this is where I want to be. I want to be in the Lord's tabernacle. I want to be in his temple. I want to behold his beauty. And I just want to dwell with him for my entire life. This is the one thing. And it's this focus that David has that he's able to put everything else in context. Even if a whole army surrounds him, he's able to put it in context because of this love that he has for God. For in the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me upon a rock. And again, this confidence because David is looking at the finish line. And now shall my head be lifted up above my enemies round about me. So I've got a whole army surrounding me, but you know what? Now shall my head be lifted up above my enemies round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. So David is fast forward. He's looking forward to the future and he's seeing, look, God is going to lift me up. I'm going to be saved. I'm going to offer sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yes, I will sing praises unto the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me, and answer me. So that, again, this is a period of great distress, a period of alarm, a crisis. And yet, David is confident in God's ability to hear him. So hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me, and answer me. When you said, seek my face, my heart said unto you, your face, Lord, will I seek. Hide not your face far from me. Put not your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Leave me not out, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. So even if his mother and father forsake him, David is confident that God, the God of his salvation, will not forsake him, that the Lord will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path. Again, we go back to Psalm 1. There are two paths, the path of the righteous, the way of the Torah, and the path of the wicked. And David is just focused on walking with God. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of my enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of my enemies. For false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. So now we are beginning to see kind of what this crisis is all about. And it appears that there have been false accusations against David. And as a result of those false accusations, his life is at risk. And that's again why I thought what Tommy Robinson is going through was a great way to sort of bring this situation that David was in to life. That, you know, this is sort of a modern day crisis that we can look at to understand the personal plight of someone who's facing false accusations, and then their life is at risk as a result. And please pray for Tommy Robinson for what he's going through. Deliver me not over to the will of my enemies. So the enemy has a will, and that will is the devil's will. And we should be under no illusion. The devil hates Christ, and if we carry the name of Christ, the devil hates us. And his puppets, no matter how pretty they look, no matter how handsome they look, no matter how well-dressed they are, no matter how smooth the words are that come out of their mouth, they want to do the will of the devil. Deliver me not over unto the will of my enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. So look at verse 13 again. What got David through all of these crises is he never took his eye off the finish line. He never took his eye. He said that the covenant faithfulness of God is always in front of him. And he's saying, I would have given up unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. So God says to us in Matthew 24, he that endures unto the end, the same shall be saved. Well, this is how we endure to the end, believing in the goodness of the Lord. Look like around us. We walk by faith, not by sight. So he concludes this psalm then saying, wait on the Lord. Wait on him. And this is the same thing that Isaiah says. Blessed are those who wait on the Lord. Wait on the Lord. Blessed are those who endure to the end. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. So the Lord will act. The enemies will not have the upper hand indefinitely. At some point, God will act, but he will act in his own time. And there's a process that Israel is going through, and Israel has to go through that process. And as Israel is going through that process, God is withholding his hand. And so those of us who are walking in the way of God, walking in the path of God, we just have to wait, that the wicked is going to have the upper hand. They're going to be able to enact laws and change laws and enact policies, and masses will follow them, and groupthink will take over. And the most immoral people in the world, the most immoral people are in the world, are people who are involved in a religious group and who can justify their immorality religiously, that they truly believe that their God authorizes them to do what they're doing. People cannot do the level of mischief and murder required by the devil if their conscience doesn't allow them, if they can't sleep at night. So when they belong to a group and everybody in the group is saying, yes, yes, this is righteous, this is the right thing to do for the good of the nation, for the good of future generations, for the pleasure of God, then they can do these things. And when you see the Nazis in the 30s and what they did, and then they went home and they played with their kids and they played with their family and they listened to classical music and their conscience was clear because they believed in the spiritual dogma of Nazism. So we have to just see our way through all of this. Psalm 28. Again, we're just picking up the theme through these Psalms of the depth of the plight and the depth of faith and the confidence in God. And that confidence has to exceed the crisis. Psalm 28, a Psalm of David. Unto you will I cry, O Lord my rock, be not silent to me, lest, if you be silent to me, I become like them that go down into the pit. So again, a period of intense crisis. This psalm opens with David making it clear, who can help him? The Lord is his rock. And that he's directing his complaint and his plea to God and begging God not to be silent. Because he understands that the extent of this crisis, that there is wholesale slaughter taking place. And if he is not helped, it's over for him. And again, the way the world is going, our societies are abandoning Christ. Any sort of Christian ethic, any sort of moral foundation, it's being abandoned. And human beings are not naturally good. And everyone's going to realize what we will end up with when our societies abandon the Christian foundation. And when this happens, we're going to see wholesale slaughter. Why? Because without Christ, without the Christian ethic, the human being, which is made in God's image, is not valued. And when the human being is not valued, nothing prevents wholesale slaughter. Nothing prevents infanticide. Nothing prevents husbands murdering wives and wives murdering husbands and parents murdering children. And this is where we're heading. This is the prophecy. And we have to say, like, if this wholesale slaughter takes place, and it's all around us, and iniquity abounds, we're going to end up like those that go down into the pit, unless God intervenes and helps us. Hear the voice of my supplications when I cry unto you, when I lift up my hands toward your holy oracle. And several places in Scripture, it's clear that in prayer, lifting up your hands to God is a desire. Thing to do. Draw me not away with the wicked and with the workers of iniquity, which speak peace to their neighbors, but mischief is in their hearts. And I highlight they are actually told by their prophet that as far as infidels go, if you have to be friendly with them, it's okay to be friendly with infidels, with non-Muslims, as long as you hate them in your heart. So you can smile in their face and laugh with them as long as in your heart you hate them. And again, Marxists are going to be no different, but it's amazing that it's right here in the text. That the workers of iniquity speak peace to their neighbors, but mischief is in their hearts. And so you don't know whose friend, whose foe. that people are around you and you don't know what ideology they're converting to, but they're smiling in your face. Give them according to their deeds and according to the wickedness of their endeavors. Give them after the work of their hands, and that's only fair. Render to them their desert. So give them what they deserve, that they have, let them enjoy the fruit of their labor. Because they regard not the works of the Lord, nor the operation of his hands. He shall destroy them and not build them up. And this is exactly what God says regarding Esau, that Esau will try to rebuild, but God himself will throw it down, and he will only support Jacob. And they're not regarding the works of the Lord. They don't understand his operation. What is God doing? And so they will not be victorious in the end. Blessed be the Lord, because he has heard the voice of my supplication. So he starts out asking God to hear the voice of his supplications. He's surrounded by the wicked. And then he says, and then he rejoices here that the Lord is blessed because he has heard the voice of my supplications. The Lord is my strength and my shield. And again, this is the confidence that we have to develop, that no matter what it looks like, no matter what happens, and again, I just really urge you to follow what's happening with Tommy Robinson, because Tommy Robinson is, don't think that Tommy Robinson is just the one man, Stephen Yaxley. Tommy Robinson is everybody. It's the common man who stands on principle, who sees wickedness and wonder what is going on here, that the young girls are being raped on an industrial scale. And because he's the one that exposed this, he must be punished. How dare you expose what we're doing? He must be punished. Well, if we are Christians and we stand in God's moral code, then we are going to stand up for what's right. We're going to stand up for the fatherless. We're going to stand up for the widow. And if we do that, we will have to pay the consequences. And so we have to have this sense that no matter how bad it gets, God will act. He is our strength. He is our shield. Our hearts must trust in him, and we will be helped. Blessed are those who wait on the Lord. Therefore, my heart greatly rejoices, and with my song will I praise him. The Lord is their strength, and he is the saving strength of his anointed. Save your people and bless your inheritance. Feed them also and lift them up forever. And again, I want you to notice this, that David, the chesed, the covenant love of the God of Israel, is always in front of David. And so while he's pleading for his own individual situation, he's pleading for his individual situation in the context of the covenant that God has with his people. David is not thinking that, oh, God will act and just save everybody. He's like, God, you're in a covenant agreement with your people. Save your people and bless your inheritance. This because of this covenant agreement that God has, Israel is the inheritance of God. God will inherit Israel. And so David can have this absolute confidence that there must be an Israel. Therefore, God, save your people and bless your inheritance. Feed them also and lift them up forever. So that ends Psalm 27. Before we go into Psalm 29, I just want to go back to a phrase here, or an observation or a situation that's highlighted in the book of Judges, to use this to introduce Psalm 29. In the book of Judges, in chapter 6, verse 31, notice this, that Joash said unto all that stood against him. This is Israel we're talking about. And so Joash is speaking to his own people that are standing against him with this question. Will you plead for Baal? Are you crazy? Are you going to stand against me and plead for Baal? Will you save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death while it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one has cast down his altar. So what's happening here is the Israelites are being influenced by the Canaanites. And instead of being faithful and exclusively faithful to the God of Israel, they are now being influenced by the Canaanites, and they're worshiping Baal to the point where they will stand against Joash, stand against the faithful servants of Yahweh, and they will actually make a case for Baal. This is Israel. So let's use this now as context for Psalm 29, that not all Israel is faithful. And so in Psalm 29, another Psalm of David, the king opens up with, or he opens with, "Give unto the Lord, O you mighty, give unto the Lord glory and strength." And this mighty is Ben Elim. It's the plural, the sons of God. So here we have different translations. Here in the New King James, they translated, "Give unto the Lord, O you mighty ones." The RSV translates it, "Ascribe to the Lord, O heavenly beings." The NASB, "Ascribe to the Lord, O sons of the mighty." So different translations translate this Ben Elim differently. So it's really Ben, the sons of the mighty one. But it's not just like human beings. These are you sons, you heavenly ones. So not sure what to make of this. Maybe David is looking forward and seeing beyond the resurrection when we are all in that glorified state. That's sort of the best interpretation I would have of this. So he says, "Give unto the Lord, O you mighty." Give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holy, be glorified and worshipped according to his majesty and according to his holiness." Now, seven times he's going to, in this psalm, highlight the voice of the Lord and just bring the glory of God through his voice. And this, again, because of the Baal worship, Baal was all about the thunder, that they believed that in the might of the thunder, that was the anger of Baal, and he was speaking. And so they had to make sure they do all these things to appeal to Baal because of this thunderous voice that he had. And so here, as Israel is compromised in their Baal worship, David is highlighting the voice of the Lord. "The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thunders." So he's making it clear, this is the God of glory, the true God. He's the one that thunders, and his yes, the Lord's his people with peace. So again, Israel is not faithful. Israel is constantly pursuing idolatry. And one in Genesis 2, and the darkness and the chaos and the waters everywhere, and God spoke upon the waters, and he brought order to creation. "The Lord is upon many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. Yes, the Lord breaks the cedars of Lebanon." So again, back in this day, the Lebanon cedars were just majestic and very powerful. So to say that the Lord breaks the cedars is to demonstrate his strength. "He makes them also to skip like a calf, Lebanon and Syrian like a young unicorn." So here you could imagine perhaps an earthquake, and to see these powerful trees just jumping and shaking and skipping, this is the power of the Lord. The voice of the Lord divides the flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness, again that sense of earth, the earth quaking. The Lord shakes the wilderness of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord makes the hinds to calve or to give birth, and discovers the forests, and in his temple does everyone speak of his glory. The Lord sits upon the flood. Yes, the Lord sits king forever. And again, we can think of Noah's flood. Also, I think personally, I go back to Genesis 1 and the flood that ensued as a result of the chaos that Satan brought about. The Lord sits upon the flood and he brings order to chaos. Yes, the Lord sits king forever. So again, whatever Satan had in mind, he could not overthrow the Lord. He sits king forever. The Lord will give strength unto his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. So again, Israel is not faithful. Israel is constantly pursuing idolatry and worshiping Baal. And here David is absolutely confident in God's majesty and God's strength, and that he will give strength unto his people, and he will bless his people with peace. So 7 times in this psalm, and again, 7 being the number of completeness, David appeals to the voice of the Lord. And, you know, again, in John 1, in the beginning was the Word, the voice of the Lord. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. And we know from Genesis 1, that everything was made with the voice of the Lord. Let there be light, and there was light. And you know, let the waters be divided from the water. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then the earth became chaotic. It became without form and void. And darkness was upon the face of the waters. And the Spirit of the Lord moved upon these flood waters, the face of the waters. So again, this is the voice of the Lord, how powerful it is, and David recognizing and acknowledging this. The last psalm I want to cover this evening is Psalm 30, and again, through all 5 of these psalms, we just get this theme of David's confidence in God's salvation, in God's saving power. No matter how intense the crisis is, or how intense the crisis was, David's confidence in God's saving power was greater. Psalm 30, a psalm and song at the dedication of the house of David. So here the house of David is being dedicated, and this is a congregational or communal psalm. I will extol thee, O Lord, for you have lifted me up and have not made my foes to rejoice over me. So the crisis is clearly over now, and David he does not forget that it is God who saved him. I will extol you, O Lord, for you have lifted me up and have not made my foes to rejoice over me. O Lord my God, I cried unto you, and you have healed me. O Lord, you have brought up my soul from the grave. So he was on the edge of disaster, on the edge of perishing. And the Lord brought up his soul from the grave. You have kept me alive, that I should not go down to the pit. Sing unto the Lord, O you saints of his, and give thanks at the remembrance of his holiness. So that personal experience that David had coming through the crisis, he's able to exhort the congregation to sing unto the Lord, O you saints of him, and give thanks at the remembrance of his holiness. For his anger endures but a moment. In his favor is life. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. This is a very covenantal observation. Again, David never forgets the covenant that God is in with Israel. And because of this faithlessness in Israel, because of their constant breaking of the covenant, God is angry, and he has a right to be angry. But here David understands, because of this chesed, this loving kindness, this covenant loving kindness, his anger endures but a moment. That in the scheme of things, the anger is just for a moment. But in his favor is life. Weeping may endure for a night, and David has firsthand experience of this, but joy comes in the morning. And this is the confidence that we have, that joy will come. Covenant joy will come. And in my prosperity, I said, I shall never be moved. This understanding. Lord, by your favor, you have made my mountain to stand strong, not through his own strength, but through the favor of the Lord. You did hide your face, and I was troubled. So again, there's this acknowledgement that God withdrew. He hid himself for a moment. You did hide your face, and I was troubled. I cried to you, O Lord, and unto the Lord I made my supplication. What profit is there? Listen to this now. He's reasoning with God. What profit is there in my blood? So for his blood to be shed, what profit is there in my blood when I go down to the pit? Shall the dust praise you? Shall it declare your truth? And David is able to reason with God like this because God's covenant is always in front of him. And so David knows there must be an Israel. There must be a royal Israel. He's entered into. And we saw this in Isaiah. Just quickly, just a reminder of Isaiah in 44:23. Sing, O you heavens, for the Lord has done it. He's done it. Shout, you lower parts of the earth. Break forth into singing, you mountains, O forest and every tree therein. The Lord has done it. What has he done? For the Lord has redeemed Jacob and glorified himself in Israel. So if Israel perishes, if Israel is wiped out according to the will of her enemies and according to the will of Satan, can this promise be fulfilled? That God glorifies himself in Israel, that God inherits Israel? David never forgets the covenant that he's a part of. And this is why he has absolute confidence that if the faithful Israelites die, and they perish like everybody else, will God be able to fulfill this promise? Isaiah 46:13, I bring near my righteousness; it shall not be far off. So David, even though God hid himself for a moment, he says, I will bring my righteousness, and it shall not be far off, and my salvation shall not tarry. Salvation of who? Salvation of what? And I will place salvation in Zion. Why? For Israel, my glory. David understands. He knows the scriptures. He understands the covenant. He understands that God must be glorified in Israel. And so if Israel dies, if Israel perishes according to the will of Satan, where will God be glorified according to his promise? He says, back to Psalm 30, Hear, O Lord, and have mercy upon me. Lord, be you my helper. You have turned for me my mourning into dancing. And so this is sort of this is the long-term perspective of the faithful in Israel. And brethren, we must have this perspective that there are a people in Israel who do not want to hear the prophecies of God. That when we really understand what God is prophesying of what he will do to Israel, and then we turn on the news and we see the upper hand that the wicked is gaining, that there's a response that we can have, which is, I don't want to hear the news anymore. And I don't want to hear the difficult prophecies. What I want to do is I want to watch entertainment instead. I want to be entertained. And when I do read the Bible, I just want to read the smooth things. And that is very, very dangerous. God gives us the book of Revelation. And then he tells us we are blessed if we read it in the continuous tense, which means read it and keep reading it. And if we hear it, which means hear it and keep hearing it. So blessed is the one who reads and keeps reading, and blessed are they who hear. Why? So that we can do the things that are stated therein. That these prophecies that are given to us so that we can understand the time that we're living in, and we can understand what we are to do, how we are to navigate, how we are to conduct ourselves. And so this Israelite, this faithful Israelite perspective is that, yeah, there may be mourning through the night, but joy comes in the morning. So there may be grief in the night, but joy comes in the morning. And David says here, you have turned for me my mourning into dancing. You have put off my sackcloth and girded me with gladness. No matter how dark it gets, and this is again the creation narrative, that God says the evening and the morning were the first day. That first the world is plunged into darkness, and then the light conquers the darkness, and the darkness is unable to withstand the light. And that is prophetic, that mankind will be plunged into a deep darkness. But we understand right from the creation account that the darkness does not win. The darkness is replaced by light, and Jesus is that light. And so we can face the darkness. No matter how dark it gets, we can face it. Why? Because we understand it will be conquered by light. You have turned for me my mourning into dancing, and have put off my sackcloth, and girded me with gladness, to the end that my glory may sing praise to you. Again, as a faithful Israelite, God will be glorified in Israel. To the end that my glory may sing praise to you, and not be silent. O Lord my God, I will give thanks unto you forever. And so that's how Psalm 30 ends. And what we see through these Psalms, again, is just this theme that no matter how desperate David becomes, no matter how dark the situation is he faces, he even...
The Church of God International would like to introduce the availability of a new app designed for your convenience.